Ted, I won't do this elaborately because I'm a little aware that, you know, time is running out. I want you to have equal time because your material is going to be very unfamiliar to me and probably to the rest of us too. So take your time and get it right.
Okay, I'll talk fast. The subject is Hispanic music in Chicago, one little record company called Arlinda Records. So over 15, almost 20 years ago, I had the good fortune to acquire a large quantity of recordings of Latin music, the entire remaining 78 RPM stock of the major distributor of Latin music in New York. The majority were recorded in the New York City area, but a substantial proportion also from the Southwest, in spite of the fact that New York is primarily a market for Caribbean-style music as opposed to Mexican or Southwest Hispanic music. But also among the treasures was a strongly representative run from this little Chicago company called Arlinda. And my comments and analysis are based on 79 takes from a probable recorded total of about 110, some of which may never have been issued in any event. Because I've not had the opportunity to work on archival music or reference material in Chicago, I'm in the position of working a little bit without a net, as it were, and have to rely on the documents themselves, the recordings, on the science of discography, and on those few other sources that do occasionally provide some information. Quite a number of intriguing enigmas remain just the same. Without exception, these 42 discs are each identified on the label as Grabación de Casa Arzola, Chicago 22, Illinois. Internal, as well as external evidence, tells us that the recordings were made in the 1950s. Postal Zone 22, at least at that time, included the Puerto Rican neighborhood of Chicago known as Humboldt Park. The enterprise Casa Arzola apparently no longer exists, but there's still a telephone assigned to the presumed owner, Otilio Arzola, still in Old Zone 22, but the number and the address are unlisted. I can't find him. Circumstance suggests that the Casa Arzola was perhaps a distributorship and a record store, as well as a recording enterprise. Otilio Arzola first appears on the third record issued by his little company. He appears as the musical arranger and director of the conjunto accompanying the singer. This kind of billing for him will continue beyond halfway in the series in a total of 15 takes. Far more significant is his appearance as a composer of 22 of all of the compositions recorded. There's 35% of all the selections that do have identified composers. The composers of 17 of the selections are unidentified. None of the songs are familiar to me, and it is difficult to refrain from the possibility of a portion of those also being by Arzola. Equally important is the fact that an additional 21 selections are composed by one of the performers, leaving only 19 selections from outsiders, as it were. In other words, the Arlinda recordings appear to be very much based on local Chicago sources. Mr. Arzola appears as composer for the first time in our sequence in a rather heady composition, which also provides a probable date. Arzola's composition, Con Bandera, is in the tradition of contestación, that is a song usually contradicting or opposing the lyrics of a previous song, usually one that's quite well known. Arzola's contestación takes on no less than the distinguished and popular beloved composer of Puerto Rico, Rafael Hernández. His earlier song, Sin Bandera, lamented the plight of Puerto Rico, first a colony of Spain and then of the United States. He was also the author of a controversial lyric about the United States, where not without justification, he referred to us as Del Tirano la Negra Maldad, the evil of the tyrant being US. At the request of Governor Muñoz Marín, the words were temporarily suppressed, only to cause further controversy. With the support of Muñoz Marín and in the face of strong opposition from the separatists, Puerto Rico, in July of 1952, became a Commonwealth of the United States and at last had an official flag. The gist of Hernández's composition was No Flag, and now we've got Con Bandera. Into this ring steps Mr. Arzola courageously with his contestación con bandera, with a flag, a bolero which extols Muñoz Marin, which refers to the U.S. as a gran nación, and Puerto Rico now as its hermana, with a new horizon of optimism. It is performed by a visiting superstar, Roberto Cantoral of Mexico, accompanied by Arlinda's house trio of guitarists.
Okay.
Like a guardian angel, the musical style of a universally known guitar trio smiles down always on the music of Arlinda Records. As the 1940s progressed, that trio, composed of two Mexicans and one Puerto Rican, achieved worldwide popularity and acclaim. The music of Los Panchos combined styles of the Mexican coast and of Puerto Rico into an urbane delivery of high professional standard that transcended national musical boundaries. The other identifiable composers in the Arlinda roster include four Mexicans, two Puerto Ricans, one Cuban, and one Argentinian. The Arlinda sound would have appealed to the smaller, recent Puerto Rican colony of Chicago, and equally to the older, much larger Mexican-American colony. The specialty of Los Panchos was the bolero, a musical form initially identified with Cuba, but internationalized in great measure by that group itself. Indeed, 36 of the compositions on Arlinda are boleros, with an additional 7 hybrid forms, bolero tango, bolero mambo, bolero ranchera, in all 55% of the total production. After that, the vals, often estilo peruano, dominates. But there is something for all preferences, from Puerto Rico, the danza, plena, aguinaldo, and mapallí. From elsewhere in the Caribbean, the guaracha, criolla, paso, danzonete, and merengue. Hybrid forms, guaracha, jibara, and plena merengue. From South America, the porro of coastal Colombia, to the hybrid tangos of Argentina. And of course, from Mexico, the ranchera and the corrido. This is an extremely broad range, and I should like to point out a much more universal panorama than we find in the smaller New York City labels. And now at last to the performance. 17 different singers, only 2 of them women, 5 trios, 19 guitarists, an orchestra, a combo, and at least 2 conjuntos. 2 of the singers are quite well known, Tony Aguilar and Roberto Cantoral, both of Mexico. 2 others are well known in New York City, Carlitos Perez and Mike Acevedo, whose arrangements, the latter's arrangements, are by no less than Charlie Palmieri. One suspects the possibility of a connection with a small New York label, Al Día, whose catalog included consistently 3 of the aforementioned people, and may have had a connection with the nearby club Cabo Rojeño, a popular night spot in New York featuring Latin music. Also well known in New York, the Trio Santurce of Puerto Rico, and also Luisito Vélez, El Jíbaro de Ciales. We must assume that the presence of the foregoing in Chicago was for the purpose of live performance, and that Mr. Arzola took the opportunity to get them on wax. It is perhaps significant that the only performance of an Arzola composition from this entire group is the aforementioned Con Bandera. They always brought their own repertoire with them. Nonetheless, this well-known group only provided 1/3 of all the Arlinda takes which we have. 9 other singers provide another 1/3, only a few takes for each. 2 singers alone alternately account for the entire other 1/3. Printed sources yield nothing, and I have searched in vain for their names on great quantities of records from New York and the Southwest. The first, Johnny Garcia, appears at the 4th Arlinda recording session to return for 4 more sessions over time. The second singer, Johnny Hernandez, not the one you're thinking of, makes his first appearance at the 15th session, which is also ironically Garcia's last. He too will return for four sessions over time, down to the penultimate, number 21. Both are voices of high caliber, and at times Hernandez can provide serious competition for no less than Roberto Cantoral. Let's hear a sample. It appears in any event that these two men, Garcia and Hernandez, are locally based rather than occasional visitors to the Chicago area. This supposition tends also to be supported by the fact that they are almost always accompanied by the Arlinda house guitarists. A word about the 19 guitarists who appeared before the Arlinda microphones, most of them only a few times. Five of them provided the majority of the trio accompanists, and like the case of Garcia and Hernandez, they cross over. The same three guitarists, Gilberto Diaz, Pepin, and Julian, constitute the trio for the first four sessions. Then Julian is replaced by visitor Pepe Quintana at the fifth session. Only Gilberto Diaz remains for the sixth, his last with two temporaries. This time he also sings in duet with the visiting guest, Raul Castro El Congo. Julian returns for the seventh session with two new guitarists. Hold your hat. One of them, Melquiades, will remain on the stalwart down through the 20th century, down to the 20th session. He will be joined by Ole Olivares for several sessions and thereafter by various alternates. There is a bit more to the string. At the sixth session, a new group is billed for the first time, the Trio Orquídea. They will remain for five more with variant billings and mixtures of the foregoing names and others. They either provide the vocals themselves or accompany either Mike Acevedo or Johnny Garcia on some issues billed as Su Trio Orquídea. We suspect the Orquídea to have been a lounge or a night spot in Chicago, and also possibly the Villa Hugo, another conjunto that appears, the name of another trio. We are tempted to think, in parallel with Aldea Records of New York, that the Casa Arzola may have served as a booking agent for local and imported talent, perhaps in conjunction with this place called the Orquídea. An interesting feature of the Arlinda recordings is the fact that there are no purely instrumental selections. All have a vocal selection, almost exclusively a soloist. The words are very much a part of the music. What do they sing about primarily? You can easily guess with the clue of so many boleros, yes, love. And of course, it's curves. 57 takes, over 70% of the total, with an additional two, are about prostitution. Just half are melancholy laments for lost love. Only two celebrate love regained. Nine takes initiate the story of declaration of love, but 16 tell of dark, bitter endings, love betrayed. We already heard a sample of this time, Vete, sung by Johnny Hernandez. Novelty and humorous songs come next in quantity. Let's see if you can guess what the subject of the lyric of this guaracha is, and it isn't revealed until the very end. Chewing gum. You have to wait to the end to know what they're singing about. Yet another, a cha-cha, provides some linguistic satire. How would an American sing it? A Chinaman. Two of five songs about children suggest current events, the death of two without explanation of cause, perhaps known to all at the time. Three others concern the children of an estranged couple, all of them sung by Johnny Hernandez. One of the four patriotic songs about Puerto Rico touches on a current event, as we have seen, and two others exalt the Puerto Rican woman. The last, by Alívaro de Ciales, sings the praises of his own hometown, Ciales. One song is devoted to sympathy for Cheryl Chessman, who was sentenced to die in the electric chair, and it also gives us an internal date. It is composed after the publication of Chessman's autobiography in the mid-1950s, but before his execution in 1960. This tape was recorded at the 17th Arlinda session. And finally, there is one Aguinaldo, the traditional Puerto Rican Christmastide format, written and performed by Alívarito de Ciales. In all, Puerto Rico is mentioned in seven selections, Mexico in two. A notable absence may be of some consequence regarding the Hispanic ambient in Chicago. A few years ago, I completed a preliminary study on Puerto Rican music recorded in New York, equally as long-winded as this one, concerned with only one single aspect, the theme of adjustment to life in New York City for Puerto Ricans. That included the trauma of climate, the cost of living, language barrier, and nostalgia for homeland. None of these concerns appear at any time in the music of Arlinda Records. The Mexican-American colony was first established prior to World War I, and with strong components from Texas and elsewhere in the Southwest, many adjustments already having been made, and the rest faced many years ago by the time the Puerto Ricans came. The Puerto Rican colony is a phenomenon only beginning in the early 1950s in Chicago. The migration was directly from the island. It was always thought that it was via New York, directly from the island, and of a slightly higher socioeconomic level, which perhaps obviated some of the troubles met by the New York Puerto Ricans. The Chicago winters, however, for example, are much more bitter than they are in New York City, and at least on Arlinda Records, nobody even complains about the weather. One last discographical consideration. The 21 recording sessions we have mentioned apparently took place in as many as five different studios, one of which seems to have been a radio station, the locale of seven sessions, beginning with the third and ending with the 14th. It is possible that those recordings were made during live performance over Spanish-speaking radio in Chicago. In any event, we've not heard the other major voice from Arlinda. Here's a sample of Johnny Garcia singing his own composition over Chicago radio, in all probability, in the 1950s.
Yo no sé lo que me pides, si ya te vas a cerrar.
set of documents is for me an intriguing challenge. The Arlinda Enterprise was a notably high professional caliber, providing a tuneful picture of Hispanic music in Chicago in the 1950s. The fact that a substantive run of the label, some issues in very high quantity, were housed by a New York distributor speaks, I think, for the wide appeal of the catalog. We are extremely grateful to Mr. Arzola for having taken that picture in wax. Thank you.
I am keenly aware that we are approaching lunch hour and that we have, an hour and a quarter until if most of us are eating here at the hotel, or are we going out on the street? You're in charge. What do we do about Q&A?
Yeah, go ahead. Take some questions.
All right. You're invited. You're in front.
For Chris, was there any activity in the Rio Grande Valley of New Mexico? I know that there is a good deal of activity in this kind of music now.
Yeah, there was actually a small label that was produced by a composer, a very strong corrido about the Filipinos versus Mexicans during the war, that came out in the 40s, very badly recorded. And of course, since then, in the late 50s, I believe early 60s, Al Hurricane started a label in Albuquerque. Somehow that style, the Mexican style that seems to be preferred in New Mexico, is guitar driven instead of accordion. That has never caught on in the rest of the area, although the Hurricane label tried very hard to distribute all over. I found them in radio stations here and there, but they never seemed to got much airplay. It's and that fiddle style, no, that was never really that popular. You know, Folkways recorded it and so on. It's an older tradition that is kind of, I think it's the younger artists who come along who keep the scene going, and they're generally from Mexico because that's where the drive still is, you know. Hell, I can think a good story that illustrates is, you know, a lot of people are upset about these trafficking corridos, and every time Los Tucanes de Tijuana, they're a group out of Tijuana who've done a lot of trafficking corridos, and the Anglo press has always criticized them, you know, for that. And finally, a friend of mine interviewed them, and he said, listen, when I grew up, this is the leader of the Tucanes, he said, I listened to the Tigres, those Tigres del Norte, singing about trafficking. I didn't want to become a trafficker. I wanted to become a Tigre. You see, it's the message, sure, the people want to hear these songs, but the musicians don't necessarily want to do that kind of thing. They want to become stars in the music business, you know.
Mike.
Is Universal a Jeanette product, it looks like?
Apparently so. This is why I don't think they were recorded in El Paso. Victor was the first ones to come to El Paso and record. This is why I'm very keen to find all the Victor recordings by Hernandez y Cifuentes, because they were the very first young group of corridistas to make records, phonograph
records. Could these have been recorded in Richmond?
I believe they were, yes.
They were.
I think Spots would confirm that. So they traveled all the way up there to the Jeanette Studios.
I guess if that's everything, then what do we do? Go to lunch? All right. Thank you very, very much to these three very distinguished scholars.
Thank you for the whole.